Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Professor Jennifer Curtin, how are you?
I'm good, Morena.
It's great to have you on the show this morning. We're talking a little bit about the leaders' debates that have been happening this week and over the last couple of weeks, and it's sort of heating up now that we're in early voting and got less than 10 days until Election Day. How are you sort of feeling about this whole period? Are you kind of ready for it to be over?
Well, I suppose in a way, yes, because it was extended by those 4 weeks as well. So I think all those parties that were concerned about the Prime Minister getting the extra fillip from the 1 p.m. briefing and not having enough time to campaign can set that aside now, because we've had, it feels like, a very long time in the campaign this time round.
Yes. I'm really interested in your thoughts on the leaders' debates that we've had. We saw the Stuff leaders' debate this week down in Christchurch. We hear a lot of conversation about who was like the winner, I'm saying in quote marks, of a debate, which is pretty hard to quantify in many ways. But who kind of came out of that, in your opinion, the stronger of the two between Judith Collins and Jacinda Ardern?
Well, I have to say honestly that I didn't watch this one. And I think I'm not alone in this, that there's a sense that these debates don't often deliver very much in terms of information about new policy. They're all led by different media outlets, and so they often canvass the same kinds of policy, so we don't always learn a lot that's new about substance. But we do get, depending on how they're moderated and who the audience is, we get a different sense, I suppose, of their personalities and their performance under pressure, which some would argue is really important, perhaps. But I'm not sure. I think there are as many people turned off by this format as there are turned on by it. But it certainly gives the media their headlines the next day. They really like it as a form of entertainment. So the more interruptions, the more shouting, rather than traditional debating that's going on, the more they feel that it's energised and all of that. So, and you know, the argy-bargy and the argument, this gives, it's like the polls, it gives the media sort of some content for the next couple of days that they can refer to. So I would have to say my reading of the last debate is that Ardern apparently really, you know, performed strongly, in the sense of that she spoke to the crowd in a way that the crowd enjoyed, and so that hers was a very energised in a positive way, and that for Collins, she started really strongly. She's always been really assertive in these debates, much more so, more consistently so than Ardern, if you like, and that's her combative, she has a combative style, and I think this is the thing, is that we see these debates only as working, or not we personally, but you know, these are deemed to work best when they are combative. That seems to be what the norm of a good debate counts as, and Collins is combative in her style. That's what she relishes, and so in that sense she held her own, but the media and some commentators are saying that there was sort of, she went off message a couple of times and sounded a bit like she was telling the crowd off, but I agree with you. I think that there's so much early voting that's happened. So what we know now is that close to 400,000 people have already voted, and this is the same amount that had voted in their entirety early in 2011. We're already much higher than the same point in time in 2017. And that suggests that there are quite a few people that have already made up their mind. Mm-hmm. And so for them, the debate that happened a couple of days ago, and even the minor party debates, might only matter to those who are, you know, determined to vote on Election Day or who haven't made up their mind. And perhaps that's who they're talking to.
I'm really interested in what you're saying about that potential format putting people off, because I've seen quite a lot of conversation around this, and I also feel like maybe that is something that is a risk that you run with these kind of debate styles. And one thing that has also been pulled out a lot is that it's a leaders' debate, but we're only actually seeing the leaders of two of the parties, and we are in an MMP system. There's also been a little bit of criticism of certain topics and big issues that haven't come up necessarily in these debates, not just the leaders, but the minor party debates too. What are some things that you have felt have been maybe lacking from these conversations?
Well, so I have a personal, you know, research bent on one particular one, and I'm working with the Gender Justice Collective, which is a group of women's organisations and non-profits around the country on this, which is, you know, nobody is talking it really. And the moderators get to choose which questions get asked, but we're not seeing a voice given to the diverse groups of women, wahine, gender minorities in these debates so far. And people shouldn't think about gender equity as an issue that is a niche issue. This is an issue that cuts across all the policies that they talk about, like workforce. Why aren't we talking about pay equity? Why aren't we talking about quality part-time work? Why aren't we talking about or hearing about, you know, the problems with the economic recovery packages focusing, you know, very heavily on construction and infrastructure and tech, where we know that the labour market is already so segregated, and what are the parties going to do? Just ask all these women to change jobs and retrain rather than investing in essential workers in health, education, elder care, childcare. So we're not seeing those kinds of questions being raised at all. And I think what's really concerning about this, apart from the substance, is that this suggests that they don't view women voters with the same respect of whomever they're considering to be, you know, the voting norm out there, which at the moment seems to be a norm, you know, like a Norman. You know, it's not, they're not talking to women and women who are concerned about their material well-being and that of their families particularly well right now. And I suppose I'm very disappointed that the debate moderators haven't asked these kinds of questions, because there's been a lot in the media about the economic recovery packages in particular, that women are missing, women's lives are missing from the economic recovery objectives. And they, the Green Party, have a really fabulous policy in this regard, but, you know, across women and rainbow communities and youth, but because, as you say, they're not at the leaders, the big leaders' debates, we're not hearing about those.
It's also been interesting, one thing that came up particularly after the first leaders' debate was the lack of conversation around Māori issues or anything Māori or Te Tiriti or, you know, things that are fundamental to us as a country. And that seems to be a similar problem maybe of, if you've got a moderator picking questions, but you've also got only two leaders discussing things, you'd hope that two leaders from the major parties might talk about something as fundamental as that. But it does seem to be an issue that keeps coming back to not having enough people in the room and not having enough people maybe coming up with those topics. What would you like to see in the future, in future elections and future campaigns? What would you like to see change?
Well, I think they should have some core issues that, like you say, are fundamental. So we know that these issues came up a lot. There was a minor party leaders debate with four Māori leaders that News Hub ran on Saturday. And we saw a lot of conversation there about Māori communities and Māori health and really core issues beyond the ones that we've seen in the major party leaders, which is essentially Kahui twins, deficit model and Ihu Mātou. And it's a very superficial broad brush and going for the contested, you know, trying to make a, rather than the substance of the issue and the underlying structural inequalities, they're kind of going for the, you know, what kind of gotcha moment are we going to get out of this question? So really they need to be thinking about, you know, the future of New Zealand and looking at the policies that the and the absences, you know, in those policies. So if moderators were doing their research, they would be able to see which parties are saying nothing and ask them questions about why don't you have a policy on X rather than what are you saying about climate change. It seems to be a little bit lazy, dare I say it. Yeah,
I know. I think you're not alone in saying that. There has been a lot of discussion around this. One other thing that I just wanted to touch on before we let you go, Jennifer, is the idea of the format maybe changing in the future as well. There's been a lot of people harking back to the old days where Kim Hill used to do a one-on-one sit-down with every leader and have a big, you know, half-an-hour conversation, and that might not necessarily be the only way to manage it. But do you think there's a different debate format or a different information format that we could possibly look at in the future to get this as more of a genuine conversation rather than just a gotcha or a soundbite moment.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think the problem is that media want sparks to fly, and I think they could with Kim Hill interviewing a single leader for sure. You know, so that is definitely one way to go. I think it's the interrupting. I think having more leaders on a stage, you know, is good if they are prepared to toe the line and do it, I suppose, like in a debate format, that when we go watch debates at university and mm-hmm. so on, that they are, that there's not all the interrupting. I do think that the shouting and the interrupting problematise it. But I think there is some irony that the media, at the end of this campaign, will say, oh, there wasn't enough emphasis on policy, but there have been plenty of opportunities for them to go look and have these conversations about policy. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps they need to think about that too, about the substance as well as the format that they want to put out there.
Well, Professor Jennifer Curtin, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show, and I hope you enjoy the next however many days we've got of campaigning, 9 days, and we'll talk to you in the very near future. So good luck with it all.
Kia ora, thanks, Rachel.
See you soon.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Professor